Test, test.
Conference record has joined the conference.
Yep, you got it.
Woo! And it's even not even eight in the morning, and we're... Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Is that Blake?
Greg.
Greg. Hi, Greg.
Crap, now he's going to know I'm not telling the truth.
Uh-oh.
I can't believe you guys are up and moving at 8 o'clock.
We can't either. Hey, you know, someone's got to keep the state running. So
we've got Nate,
so we're good.
Greg, would you like to give this PowerPoint?
Yeah, you know, I've already seen it, so I'm going to leave the meeting, okay?
All right.
Well, let's see. I see we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people seeing the screen, but I'm only hearing one voice.
Hi, Margaret. This is Rob.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Margaret, this is Will Ramsey, but...
Oh, hey, Will.
Thanks for sending me that. I can't see the screen, though, because I'm on my iPad.
You should be able to.
Yeah, you should be able to.
Got to have the GoToMeeting app.
We'll be posting this right after the meeting.
That's fine. I'll just listen and absorb.
Yeah. I could Earl can save it real quick as a PDF, and I can go ahead and send it to you.
No, that's okay. I can go online later. I'll go to the website and pull it up. But I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right.
And this is Sarah. And then I was going to – did Amanda send out the email for the webinar, or did you?
I did.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
This is Darcy. I just joined.
Hi, Darcy.
Good morning.
So you're on the call, but you haven't gotten online yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, we'll give a few minutes, to get all of our devices synchronized.
Good morning. This is Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Hello.
And I'm just with Sarah. I'm communicating with Dawn. Oh, good, Dawn. I'm glad you got that.
I'm
looking for the email as well, but, yeah.
I can't find the email that Margaret sent.
You know what? I think it's because probably
the calendar.
I sent it as a calendar out in Outlook, but it's still up as an email.
It's probably in your deleted emails, because once you accept it, it'll go to your deleted emails.
Does it not show up on your calendar?
I don't know that I ever clicked accept.
I can go send
She's in now, though. Right. Dawn, do you need... So you don't have the video then now.
Right. I need the video link is all...
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you have... So look in your Outlook and see if this... Does it pop up on your calendar? Because that would be where it is.
That's where I got it.
Okay, so if I click accept, which I had never done, it'll show up.
Then go to your Outlook, and in this time slot.
Let's see.
Okay. Dawn, are you doing okay?
Yeah, I don't have the link to
let me go forward it to you again real quick.
Okay.
Let me ask real quickly. I see Brad is connected online. Brad, are you hearing this? There was a two. Okay. How about Dan?
Yeah, I've got you.
Okay. And we've already heard from Darcy, Greg, Sarah, Rob. So Dawn is... And
Will.
Dawn is hearing but not seeing. Will is hearing but not seeing. And Brad is seeing but not hearing.
And Margaret, I just forwarded that calendar invite to Dawn
well,
again. And Dawn, it's in the calendar invite.
And therein lies the problem.
Well, except for that, like, it's in the email. Like, you're going to get a calendar invite, and when you open up that email is where you'll see the link. It shouldn't show in the email.
Accept or decline.
Oh,
and
it doesn't give you...
start time, end time. No, it doesn't give me any details at all. It just says meeting request.
All right, let me do it in
a different
way.
If I click accept, it doesn't do anything.
Okay, I'm sending it in a different way then. I'm just going to send it as a standard email to you.
Thanks. And I wonder if that's because I have GoDaddy. You know, we don't have the Outlook format.
Got it. You should be getting it shortly.
Thank you.
So, Sarah, how long is everybody wanting or willing to be on the discussion here today?
You've got us locked in for an hour, Earl.
Okay.
And that's it, buddy.
All right, you should drop off. I expect you to drop off after about 15 minutes, Greg.
okay, I think, Margaret, do we have... Who are we missing? See, I don't think I heard Glenn.
Right. Margaret she just walked out and now walked back in. She went to resend the link.
Yeah,
I sent that
to Dawn, so hopefully that will.
I cut and pasted it to her in email too, Margaret, so where she. I think Dawn is connected now.
Yep.
I am in.
Okay, she's good.
There's Dawn and there's Glenn.
Glenn's here. Okay, awesome. And what about...
We got 2.5 inches of rain yesterday morning up here at Frankfurt.
That's awesome.
That's pretty good.
That's awesome. And actually, you know, I did get, yes, this morning, I had a flash flood watch from Thursday to Sunday.
Yeah, I did too.
Did you see that? Like, yeah. I've been all worried, and then we've had this massive change in the forecast. I was all worried about us running out of water, and You're right up there, Republican, Washington, Marshall, Nemaha, Brown, Cloud, Clay, Riley.
Oh, you are. Yeah, I did. Okay, how long we got?
Sarah, I heard 2 to 6 inches. Who's getting the 6?
I don't know, and that's because we've got these, holy cow, now that it just changed again. They've got us in for rain Thursday through Tuesday.
Ew.
But WIBW on TV, their weather map showed Sunday was going to be the really big rain. They were showing 4 to 7 inches.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just their projected weather map deal with all the colors. But it's like, wow.
You know,
I don't know that I want 7 inches in a short dive.
Well, I've been complaining to Tuttle Creek that they emptied it out so quickly, and now this is going to make me look really bad. It makes me look stupid.
I'll believe it. Rain when I see it.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
I won't start panicking.
Water in 7 minutes flowing into our reservoirs. It's a good thing.
Not the sediment.
Oh, sediment. No, that's not a good thing. Nutrients.
Okay.
Sarah, do you want to start it
then? Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Okay, so... I'm seeing. Can you get it back up to the top of that list? I'm just want to do a real quick, just so we have an idea to make sure that we've got Brad, Dan, Darcy, Don, Glenn, Greg, Sarah, and Will of the committee, and we've got Rob Reschke with the Division of Conservation. Anyone else online that I haven't mentioned?
This is Katie, and I'm listening.
Oh, Katie.
I'm traveling, so I should be at a computer in like 20 minutes, so I'll jump online when I can, but I'll just listen in until then.
Okay, perfect. And in the room here, we'll just go around so you can hear our voices, even though you're mostly going to hear from Earl, so we'll end with him, and then we'll just get started. So I'm going to start with...
This is Kara Hendricks with the Water Office.
Kelsey Wheeler with the Water Office.
Nathan Westrup with the Water Office. Tom Stiles from Department of Health and Environment.
Margaret Fass, Kansas Water Office.
And Earl Lewis here with the Water Office. So we'll go ahead and get started. You can jump in anytime with questions or hit something on the chat if you want to if you got a question as we go along. As Margaret and I talked about this a little bit and talked about the fact that maybe we want to cover really some background for your first two goals. And for some of you, this is kind of old news. You've heard it many times, but we wanted to make sure everybody's on the same foundation here and give you some background on our water supply programs in general. So I apologize to those of you that are going to hear this stuff for the however many time here. So, again, just to review which goals we're talking about, increasing water supply capacity and availability in federal reservoirs. By 2020, purchase all available storage in federal reservoirs. By 2025, evaluate the ability to raise the conservation pool in each of the reservoirs. And then by 2050, explore additional storage possibilities, such as construction of multipurpose small lakes. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background on where we are today and then talk about each of those three different pieces. Calling all the storage into service, the reallocation, and then what we've done so far in the past few years on evaluating new reservoirs. I've done this for a number of different folks, and we usually call this Reservoir 101. It's stuff you never thought you wanted to know and you probably still don't, frankly. But just to give you a little bit of background on where we were, how this whole thing developed, really, you have to go back clear to the 1950s with the flood of 51 and the drought of the 50s that really put not only the state of Kansas but this whole area in the Midwest on more of a path of trying to reduce flood issues and provide more water supply. And so that's really when the Water Resources Board, our predecessor agency, was formed with the goal of trying to identify projects that would help further that along. At the federal level, as you know, they were in the middle of working through a number of flood control projects, and certainly the 51 flood accelerated a number of those here in Kansas. But in 1958, there was a recognition, again, kind of after that 1951 drought, that the federal government was building a lot of flood control reservoirs. And so what they really said was, we can make these bigger and add a water supply component to help us through the drought times if there's a local sponsor that will take on the task of paying for that. And so the state of Kansas, this happened all over the nation. Most places in the nation, it happened from individual cities. So Topeka or Lawrence or Olathe or whatever would send a letter to the Corps of Engineers and say, if you build a reservoir, we want to be involved in it. In Kansas, the state took on that role through the Water Resources Board and gave assurances on a number of reservoirs, pretty much all of them that were built and even some that weren't built, that we would help cost share on that. That went along until a lot of those got built. And in 1974, then the state didn't have any enabling legislation to actually allow us to to purchase that storage and pay the costs. And so 1974 was the State Water Plan Storage Act that put that authority in place and put the Water Office or the Water Resource Board at the time in charge of that. Contracts were signed at Milford, Big Hill, and Hillsdale that same year with the Corps of Engineers. The first contract with the user was in 1976 with Wolf Creek, which became effective in 1977. And that'll be important here in just a little bit. And I'll come back to this variable rate issue in a little bit, but that was in 1983. In 1985, and Tom Stiles was involved in this at the time, and so he can correct me if I'm wrong, but there were some issues that were going on primarily in the Verdigris Basin, but in several that dealt with state and Corps of Engineer interaction on reservoirs and reservoir releases and how do we make sure that we're protecting low flow releases and also a lot of these reservoirs and the low flow releases were put in place before there was the Clean Water Act and a lot of the effluent issues. And so there was an MOU between the state and the Corps that really said we would work on some mechanisms to help protect those low flow releases for their in-stream purposes. And in exchange, the Corps would look at reallocating storage from water quality purposes, which were used to support those low flow releases, over to water supply. And so that happened in 1985, and all that work had to be done over a 10-year period, which you see in the next last was culminating with what we call the big buy in 1995 and 96, which impacted seven reservoirs, and we'll come back to those in just a little bit. Also about that same time, since the Water Resource Board had been reconstituted into the Water Office, and there was a recognition that folks like Jeffrey here in the Kansas Basin were using the water marketing program as essentially an insurance policy to back up, make sure they had water at their intake during times of drought, that there was that wasn't exactly a very efficient method of operating the reservoirs or allocating our storage. And so some folks around here, again, including Tom, and I was very involved in that back then, created the Water Assurance Program, which uses storage to supplement low flows during times of drought to make sure that municipal industrial water right holders actually have wet water at their intakes during times of drought. In 1991, again, we'll come back to this, Water Marketing Fund was created, and then I'll jump to the last one. The last contract that we have signed to date on a reservoir is in 2002 at Kannapolis. So you can kind of see the development of the program over that 30-year period.
Hey, you said in the beginning that there was some lakes that were on schedule to be built and weren't. Where were those at?
Well, there were several kind of all over the state. There were a few here in the Kansas, and we'll come back to that towards the end of the presentation, but there were some in the Neosho and clear down into the Walnut, down around Fort Scott. So, I mean, at Garnett. So there's just some kind of all over the place.
Okay.
But we'll come back to that here in just a little bit, Dan.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Again, just to kind of give you a little bit of background, a little scale. So this is a map of essentially the eastern two-thirds of the state, and it shows those municipal, rural water districts, industrial users that rely on reservoirs, and not only through the state, but also through City of Wichita and El Dorado and Cheney. But you can see that essentially two-thirds of our population relies on reservoirs for our water supply. Energy production, almost 60% of our energy production relies on these reservoirs to ensure that we have cooling water produce those. And again, Lacine, Wolf Creek, Tecumseh, Lawrence, Jeffrey, several others that fit in that category. So now the water marketing program, we'll hit water marketing assurance. So the water marketing program, again, established in 1974, and we talked about that. From a fiscal perspective, the state really subsidized the program for a number of years. The state general fund was essentially the operating fund for the water marketing program from 1974 through 1989. It essentially operates as a raw water utility, so the state holds the storage and then markets a water service contract to municipal industrial customers. All the cost, whether you're at Milford or Kannapolis or Elk City, All those costs are pooled in the marketing program as if they were one reservoir. All the revenue is pooled as if it was one reservoir as well. And so what happens at one reservoir impacts users at all the reservoirs that are water marketing reservoirs and vice versa. These contracts are 10-year contracts, can be 10, 20, 30, or 40-year contracts. There is an option to renew them at the new conditions, but those are 10 to 40-year contracts. And, again, our first one with Wolf Creek ends at the end of 2017, so our first contract is coming up for renewal here in just about 18 months. Prior to 1983s is somewhat of an incentive, in my opinion, to try and get the program on its feet and get folks involved. I'm sure there was some politics involved at the time. There was the rate that the state could charge for water was set to be no less than 5 cents per 1,000 gallons and no more than 10 cents per 1,000 gallons. And so that, again, the state was subsidizing the program at that point and running it through the state general fund. After a few years, as the state would tend to do, they got tired of subsidizing the program. And so in 1983, they basically changed the law and said, we need to get this program up on its feet so it's self-sufficient and not relying on state general funds to subsidize it. And so in 1983, the rate was changed to be variable each year based on what the needs of the program were. Current rate is about 38 cents per 1,000 gallons for 16 and 17, and projected to stay in that neighborhood, escalating a little bit over time, but staying in that neighborhood going forward for several years. So you can see a pretty big disparity between our initial users and those that would get a contract now. That plays into, for these folks that are getting ready to renew, that plays in as a big part of their decision-making. Wolf Creek will go from a 10-cent contract to a 38-cent contract here in 18 months, and as you might imagine, that's a pretty big fiscal impact. Here in the Kansas area, Jeffrey has a contract for Milford to, again, back up their cooling water. They're also in the Assurance District. Our big water marketing project really is in Clinton, where the entire water supply at Clinton Lake is really dedicated to the water marketing program. And you can see the users that rely on Clinton pretty much all around the lake, all those rural water districts, City of Lawrence, City of Baldwin, all of those really rely on Clinton Reservoir for their water supply. And you can see those two yellow cubes is where those intakes for the treatment plants are. And so you got one really going through the City of Lawrence and then one at the upper end, which goes to what's called the Tri-District through Douglas 3, Shawnee 8, and Osage 5. So that's kind of the footprint of the folks that are served by Clinton Reservoir. We'll flip over to the assurance program here for just a minute. Again, came into place in 1986, and we talked about the purpose of that, really to change and serve a different need, again, based on that 1985 memorandum agreement with Corps of Engineers, and that agreement allowed the state to purchase more storage through a reallocation process at original construction price, which was a big deal. If we went and bought storage now, the current rules would say that they would take whatever the cost was to build it, use some construction price indices, and update that cost to what they would expect that to build that same storage today. And so it's significantly different. Just to give you a scale on that, the initial numbers that we would run would say, we'll come back to Milford and Perry here in a little bit, which is obviously what drove this first goal in the original point. If we buy that at the numbers we're talking about today versus what it would cost to build that same storage, it's on the order of 20 times more expensive to build that storage now than what it would be to purchase from the Corps. The assurance program operates as a system of reservoirs, especially in the Kansas. So whereas in marketing, we just saw the Clinton Lake footprint, where the Clinton Lake serves those users, and that's really all it serves. We get into the assurance program where we've got Milford and Tuttle and Perry. Those can all be operated as a system so that we try and maximize the use of those reservoirs to benefit all those users downstream. The assurance districts pay the cost to purchase that storage and then pay for the operation and maintenance and then pay for the state's administration of that. Again, they're targeted to municipal industrial water rights, but obviously with maintaining stream flows, a lot of folks benefit from the overall operation. Currently, there are three assurance districts that are formed in the state of Kansas, the Kansas, the Marazine, and the Cottonwood and Neosho. And you can see the red dots there are kind of the primary, where the primary users' intakes are for each of those districts. And obviously, you can go down and see, as you look through, pretty well identify who most of those folks are. In Kansas, we have a pretty good combination of municipal and industrial, not only Jeffrey, but the cell phone plant here, it used to be an OV, I'm not sure, cell phone plant here in town, the Lawrence and Tecumseh power plants. And so anyway, there's kind of a combination here on the Kansas River of both municipal and industrial. Again, just to kind of give you a scale of the financial side, and these are FY15 numbers. From the marketing program, we took in about $3.3 million and expended about $3.8. Again, that's a typical government program. Really the way that we have that, why the difference there was our, much like a municipality, our revenue varies on the marketing program based on whether it's dry or wet. And so as we went through the drought in 2011, 2012, and at the beginning of 2013, the revenues from the sale of water went way up. So we had a pretty good balance in our water marketing program. We try and that water marketing fund that came into place in 1989 to get the program off of the state general fund, the goal was really to try and have about a $500,000 operational reserve, because we know that during wet times, our revenue can swing down by as much as $400,000 or $500,000 based on our projections. And so we're making sure that we're not running in the red and having to go borrow money to operate a program. Some of that expense was getting the startup of the John Redmond dredging project, and so that's actually why a lot of that difference between the revenue and expenditure on the marketing program was getting that in place before the bond came online, and now we're expending out of the bond. Next is about $400,000, so about a tenth of the revenue, or a little over a tenth of the revenue. And again, the difference here is on the fiscal year issue of some of our expenditures. The programs operate on a calendar year. The state operates on a fiscal year, which is July to June. And so there's times when we get revenue in one fiscal year, expended into another fiscal year, and likewise revenue in one calendar year versus expenditures in another one. So our numbers really can be off a little bit depending on what the reporting period is and the operational period. But really the assurance program pays just the cost to purchase the storage, our costs that are associated with operating and maintaining that storage that goes through the Corps of Engineer, and then a negotiated administration enforcement. So their bill is essentially each calendar year based on what those costs are going to be. We'll move into storage here real quick, and this is where it gets really tricky because, again, like any good government program, we like to dice things up and call them a lot of different things. So assurance storage, again, very key here is that storage within a reservoir that is dedicated to serving those assurance district members their direct needs. Future use storage, which is really what drove this discussion. Again, we'll come back to that in more detail, but it's storage that was made available, especially in some of those early contracts we have with the Corps, where we have it under contract. So we have it secure in some manner, but we haven't called it into service. And that means we don't have control of it, nor are we making payment on it yet. But the clock is ticking. Marketing storage is water supply storage within a reservoir, like at Clinton Lake, that serves specific customers. So it serves that water marketing program. Reserve capacity is in some ways like the future use storage. It's storage the state has purchased. The state has paid the full bill on, we pay the operation maintenance on, but it is not dedicated to a user. It's not been placed under a contract with either a marketing or assurance customer. So future use and reserve capacity operationally end up pretty much the same, but financially and control-wise, they're different. And then finally, water quality storage in this basin, in Tuttle Creek and at Clinton, serves those downstream releases, serves that low flow release, make sure we have in-stream needs met, make sure we have water quality effluent issues met, and so those sorts of things. And we'll provide you with all this, so you don't need to, we'll go through every number here line by line. But that this kind of gives you the entire table of all the reservoirs that the state has some ownership interest in, and you can kind of see down at the bottom there the general scale. 370,000 in water quality, 296,000 in water marketing, 213,000 in insurance, about 100,000 in reserve capacity, and almost 500,000 acre feet in future use storage. And so that's the issue that always comes up. And as you can see, Milford and Perry are really the big storage ones there in future use storage. And obviously they always come up when the issue of navigation releases to support Missouri River navigation comes online. That becomes a hot topic for us politically. Obviously, they're, in the long run, they're water supply issues. That's what they're for. In the short term, it's somewhat of a recreational issue, but it's a question of control here, too. So if we look at each one of those, and I'm just going to focus kind of on the pie chart on each one of these. At Milford, you can see we've got a portion of marketing and assurance, the marketing being the light blue and the assurance being kind of the purple. But the future use storage, roughly two-thirds of the storage is still in future use storage capacity. We have not called it into service. We've not started paying for it. So the Corps still maintains operational control over it. But at some point, we will and have to start paying that. And so that's where that one's at. Tuttle Creek, there is no future use storage. This was one of the reservoirs that was part of the 1985 memorandum of agreement with the Corps and the big buy in the 95-96 timeframe that really created the water supply storage that you see in the assurance, again, the purple, and then the reserve capacity, kind of that pink or mauve color, one of my favorites, and then the blue being the water quality. Water quality, in this case, the Tuttle, is very important for the operation of the assurance district and the operation of the Kansas River, really helps to support that whole flow. And so that's roughly about 60% of it, with the other 40% being dedicated, as you can see, to water supply purposes, primarily the assurance program. Moving on downstream, at Perry, very similar to Milford, a large portion of it, 5/6 of Perry is in future use, while 1/6 is in assurance district storage that serves downstream needs going on down from Lawrence through the Kansas City area. And finally, Clinton, most of it is water supply, with about half, just under half of it being in service for water marketing. There is a future use storage at Clinton as well. We don't talk about it in the same context we do with Milford and Perry, of being kind of that unfunded liability that we need to find a way to call it into service and pay for. And the reason for that is that group of users I showed on the map a little bit earlier. Their growth, our projection would show that their growth will end up needing all of that storage, and that we will be able to move that into the marketing program, the marketing fund, over time. And so we don't say it's an unfunded liability, it's a planned liability that we have moving forward of how we're going to call that into service over time and put that to use. So it's still kind of in that same category, but we really have a plan. So if we want to talk about when do our supply and demand needs meet? That's really kind of the bottom line in any of these basins, of when do we have trouble making it through a 1950s-style drought. And so this is something that those of you that were on the GOAL team last year probably look familiar, because we provided this as background. But this shows, as you all know, kind of a map of how much storage there is in each of the reservoirs, how much yield or how many acre feet of water we can get out of that reservoir each year during a 1950-style drought, what the sediment accumulation rate is our best estimate, although Tuttle Creek is not even close. I'm not sure what that is. And then you can see down in the bottom left the supply and demand. And so with the line going up, obviously, with increasing demand, and then the dashed line being the supply we have available with the storage that is called into service today, with the solid line going out to about 2064 being all of the water supply storage in the Kansas area, how long is that going to last? So these are things that we need to – every once in a while we go back and update them. We probably need to go back and update them, again, making sure that changes in hydrology or something else or new projections on population haven't changed those lines. But that's something we really need to be working with the Assurance District on, is matching up with their plans and our users' plans. Anyway, that kind of gives you a scale of the time frame. Why that's important is for this discussion is, remember that 2064 date, that's when all the demand, we would say, when we need all that water. Each of these contracts that have this future use storage have an end date by which we need to call that storage into service and pay for it. At Milford, that's by 2034. That's a pretty low interest rate, 2.63% interest. You can see the balance there of that future use storage. Last year's balance, just over $22.5 million. If we called, we can amortize that over the remaining life of the contract. If we did that, if we called all of Milford into storage today and assumed those costs, it would be about $1.7 million more cost to the state of Kansas to control that storage. You know, most of that cost we're going to pay sometime. Operation and maintenance is something that if we don't call it into service, then we forego those costs. But we do accrue interest over time as well. Perry, the end date is 2041. Our interest rate is actually 3.05 rather than 3.04. Our 2015 balance on that future use storage is about $22 million, and the additional principal and interest would be about $1.6 million. So, again, that kind of gives you a scope of what the financial side of this future use storage in Milford and Perry is. If we look at what's the balance, there's five reservoirs in this category: Milford, Perry, Clinton, obviously all in this region, Hillsdale, right across the hill in the Meredithine, and then Big Hill down in southeast Kansas. And if you added all of those balances up, it's about $106 million. Hillsdale is for no bigger than it is. It's a big cost, especially on future use storage. Big Hill is also, for its size, fairly expensive as well. Not as expensive as either of these two, but when you put them in context with we'll go back up. Put in context with the overall storage that's associated with them, it's pretty high-cost storage. So one of the things that we're also working on in at the federal level, every couple of years, the Congress is supposed to pass what's called the Water Resource Development Act, or in 2014, the Water Resources Reform and Development Act, that is really about core policy and core projects. And so they had a section in response to some folks that had future use storage really down in Arkansas that said a contract holder, such as the water office that has future use storage, can submit a plan to the Corps of Engineers that would really change that. They had some folks in Arkansas that wanted to get out of their contract. They'd bitten off more than they could chew, and so they had this big debt, and they wanted to get out from under it, and so they couldn't do that without congressional action. And so they have to submit a plan. We submitted a plan on all of our reservoirs, where we have a higher interest rate, trying to bring that interest rate down to what we would pay if we were signing a contract today. Instead of trying to get out of it, we said, why don't we try and match up our end dates of those contracts with when our demand is, so that our financial system is a little more logical, if you will. And so in this case, we said, why don't we extend the end dates at Milford and Perry to 2064? We also said, in this case, at Milford and Perry, you might remember those graphs. I didn't mention any water quality storage at Milford and Perry. And I also mentioned that water quality storage really is supposed to support low-flow releases or minimum releases. I think we have 8 reservoirs or something like that in the state of Kansas that have water quality pools that we have touch. All of those are to support a minimum release. Milford and Perry are the only two reservoirs we have in the state of Kansas that have a minimum release that we recognize under our operations agreement, and the Corps recognized in the regulation manual, that doesn't have a water quality pool to support that minimum release. in all those other cases, that water quality storage is owned by the Corps of Engineers, and there's no payment, no debt to the state of Kansas for that. We cooperatively manage that. Nate and the folks from the Corps work together to manage those low flow releases to meet all those purposes in stream. And so what we're suggesting is we take somewhat of a unique or backwards approach from what the Corps usually sees. Normally they have folks coming and saying, I want to take water quality storage and convert it to water supply. So like what we did in the 80s and 90s, we're here, we're saying we've got water supply that is really supporting a water quality purpose. Let's take some of that storage and call it water quality storage, take that off of our debt service rolls, and it really wouldn't be operated any differently than it is today. And so we put that before them, and we've got some general numbers, and I apologize. I don't have what the size of those pools would be based on our quick estimation, but it's a pretty significant number on each of them.
But the releases would still be equivalent to what they're doing right now.
Yes, right. That's really the bottom line here is why we're saying this doesn't make any sense that we would have to pay for something that you're already doing. The operations aren't going to change, and everywhere else in the state, you own that storage, and we don't get charged for it. There's an inequity issue. So.
I think at Milford, we need about 17% of conservation pool and 19%
Okay. I don't know if you could hear Nate there, but he said he thought that Milford, about 17% of the conservation pool would be needed to serve that minimum release, and about 19% at Perry.
Great.
So,
good. Thank you.
So, you know, you think 17% at Milford, and we still have to pay on two-thirds of it, that's about a quarter of the debt load there. So,
sure.
Again, a pretty significant amount. Well, I don't know where that's going to go, but that's kind of what we've thrown on the table.
Earl.
Yeah.
Earl. Does it do – I'm still half asleep, so I'm not thinking all the way through here, but does it help you at all to exchange water supply out of those two reservoirs – and get an in-kind exchange transfer that over to some of the other reservoirs?
Well, it probably doesn't here because we haven't made a payment on that yet. But that's an idea that Nate has thrown out in the Verdigris, where we've got somewhat of a similar situation where maybe the conditions have changed, and maybe we overbought on the Elk City a little bit where we actually have paid them. And we've got that unfunded liability at Big Hill. And so Nate has proposed to them to look at, can we transfer some of the money that we've already given you over to Big Hill? And again, not to change the operations of the basin, but change the finances of it a little bit. So probably
right.
Not here in the Kansas, but you're tracking exactly where Nate's idea was on the Verdigris, and they're still, again, I think sometimes we come up with ideas that they've never heard of or they just think we're crazy, really. And so that's one that made them scratch their head pretty hard of can they even do it, and if so, how would they do it? So we haven't given up on it, but it's still in the thinking stage. So
yeah. Good. All right. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you. Just to touch on reallocation of storage, and again, that we did that really under Tom Stiles' leadership here when he was at the water office during the 80s with that big buy on those seven reservoirs. That's really – we did a reallocation at Kanopolis. That's really what ended up with us buying storage in 2002. We did a reallocation at John Redmond. Conditions were a little bit different there, and the reason that I say they were a little different is because the contracts, most of the contracts you have, and certainly the ones at John Redmond, when the Corps was building these reservoirs, they made a projection of how much sediment was going to come in and generally where that sediment was going to go. Was it going to go in the conservation pool or was it going to go in the flood pool? And at John Redmond, they said roughly they thought two-thirds of it was going to go in the flood pool, one-third is going to go in the conservation pool. Well, it's pretty much opposite that. And so the conservation pool was being impacted more than they estimated by the water supply and the flood control less. Our contract with them required that when that happens, that they redistribute storage and compensate for that. And so the only mechanism they had to do that really was going through a reallocation study. And so they did that. These reallocation stored, they are a Corps of Engineer action because it takes a change in allocation that the Corps assigns to different pieces of it, whether it's water supply or water quality or flood control or whatever. Typically, by law, they're supposed to be paid for, if it's water supply, fully by the sponsor. A lot of times we can get some cost share through operation and maintenance. The reason it has to be so extensive is they have to look at all the impacts. It's somewhat of a NEPA evaluation of what all the purposes are served by the reservoir are, whether it's going to be, whether it's going to be impacted beneficially or hurt. And in the Kansas, what we're talking about really is taking away some flood control, reallocating that to water supply. Best case, they say, if everything is funded, we can do it in 3 years. Well, at John Redmond, we sent the letter in 1996 saying we want to start looking at it. We signed the agreements in 2012. We're currently looking at Kannapolis and Melbourne. So, again, that just kind of gives you a scale of where it's at. It is, if you can achieve it, if it's doable from a cost perspective, it's the cheapest and easiest to do in the big picture, but it's certainly not a 6 month evaluation and an up or down vote here. It's still a pretty significant effort. But we're fully on board with looking at all the reservoirs in the Kansas because it certainly makes sense as far as again, our cost perspective. Additional reservoir sites, kind of moving on to the third thing here before we run out of time. And I'm going to have Margaret send out links to a couple of documents on our website if you haven't already found them. One of those is the reservoir roadmap, which was we kind of came up with together with the House Vision 2020 Committee in 2009, and then in 2010 reported back to the Vision 2020 Committee, and the Water Authority really adopted this approach in 2010. So you see the volumes there. There's a statewide kind of need and purpose in Volume 1. What's the policy issues? What's the budget, overall budget for a statewide looking way out in the future? And then different basin sections. We started with the Neosho because that was the one that had the most critical need. But there's a Kansas Lower Republican section, which was published in 2013. So we'll make sure you get a link to that. It's about 40 pages long. It's got a lot of detailed information. I'm going to hit on just a couple of things here. One thing we looked at and was where are all the watershed dams that have been built and that have not been built above each of the reservoirs, all the watershed districts in each of the basins, including the Kansas. And so we have information on some of the information on each of those dams. And I bring this up because there's been examples in this region, Banner Creek, let's see, Sabeth is in the Missouri, right? Alma. And so there's been some spots where we've had an ability to take a watershed dam, and because of the terrain really there, you can make it bigger. And you make it bigger and then add water supply or recreation, and you can add some water supply to that. And that's really what the Multipurpose Small Lakes Program and Act that was put in place, again, in the mid-'80s was all about, taking an existing spot, making that reservoir bigger, and serving more purposes. And so I know if Rob's still on the line, that's really a Division of Conservation over at Department of Ag runs that program. We have a piece of that in trying to figure out the water supply need and how that should fit, but we kind of cooperatively work that, and Rob's the primary operator of that through the Division of Conservation now. So that's one option. You can see there on the table, there's been 240 of them built with so far in the Kansas region, and you can kind of see the number of structures, how old they are, and drainage area. And that report also has how many in each of these different watershed districts were not built. And so that's one thing that we have been talking about. Seems like there might be some movement through NRCS to re-engage on that and maybe look at sites that would be a good fit for some additional construction. So that's one thing we would look at. So if you want to talk about some of those larger reservoirs that weren't built, this may be a hard map to see. We can get you a better copy of it again. But this was something that was put together by the Bureau of Reclamation in 1973, and it was both Bureau and Corps reservoir sites. And you can obviously, each one of those little, you can see a kind of a black dot or a little line there of where the proposed dam site would be. And obviously, if there's a reservoir above it, that means they built it. And if there's not, then that was the site that they talked about and did some work on, but didn't move forward for whatever reason. And so you can see there's a whole host of them, including a number here on in the Kansas, on the Vermilion, on Stranger Creek, on Soldier Creek. Some a little further up in the basin. So there's several in the Kansas that were on the Corps radar, at least at some point, including at one point there was one on the Kansas River right above Topeka called Cairo or Cairo, anyway, that would have backed water up almost all the way to Manhattan. So I don't think we're going back to that one. But there's a number of sites out there. We also had worked with Kansas Biological Survey during the same time to use LIDAR data and look at are there other potential sites that really weren't identified and what those are. And, again, there's not a map that goes with that that we have available, but there's a table in that reservoir roadmap that kind of talks about what their general size and yield would be. So if we look at all those reservoir sites, and, again, you can come back to this table and look at it in more detail when you want to, but this has each of those different sites, including, again, Black Vermilion and Cedar Creek and Soldier, and what the proposed multipurpose storage was going to be at that time and estimated yield. And so, you know, whether any of these are getting more ripe towards moving forward is, I think, is the overall discussion. But at least it gives you something to think about and chew on here as you move forward with the other sites that are not built. As we talked about this almost 10 years ago now, 7 or 8 years ago, as part of the reservoir roadmap, Texas has been looking at the same thing. Texas is actually actively trying to build about 4 reservoirs. And so they, as part of their effort, 10 or 15 years ago, passed a state law that basically said if there's an identified reservoir site in their water plan, then the state really can't spend money on building infrastructure in that. So it was really an effort to try and make sure that you wouldn't build a whole lot of things in a prime reservoir site. Obviously, you can't prevent somebody on their private property from going and doing what they want. But it was an effort to try and provide some level of protection for those best sites that are still out there. So we looked at that as well. As you might imagine, once you start actually talking about real sites and talking about real land and real people's land, things get really controversial and very heated in a hurry. But we had an advisory group at that time looking at what all the types of things that we ought to be looking at if we're serious about building a new reservoir of any size. What are all the things we need to think about as we're selecting a site? And so this is really the criteria that group came up with to say here's all the things you ought to put on some level of scoring sheet. If you're selecting between 2 or 3 reservoir sites, here's some things you ought to be thinking about. Which one you put most importance on versus somebody else is kind of the eye of the beholder, but it's certainly something you better go through that list pretty thoroughly as we're thinking about it. And again, I won't go through each of those because I know we're running short on time here and that's about where we've gotten with the new reservoir site. So, with that, that's kind of what I wanted to throw in front of you today as background. I'll be happy to try and answer any questions you all have or take this in a different direction if you want to as well.
So how receptive were they on your new plan that you submitted January 1st?
Well, actually, we should be hearing any day how receptive they are. That had to, as you might imagine, we worked with our Tulsa and Kansas City district. You know, they got folks from all kinds of different areas, and so we went through an effort in the first from January through March of working with them so they could kind of standardize all these things a little bit. And then it went up through the process to headquarters, and by law they have 180 days to tell us what they think. And so we're pretty much there. So we should be hearing something back from them really any day now of what their thoughts are. My guess is really, you know, everything that piece of the law was really crafted to try and give folks that bit off more than they could chew a way to get out of it. And, you know, part of it was who else could we sell this water to if you don't want it? And so we said we want all of it, but we want to talk about how we work together to pay for it and manage it differently. And so different conditions. So my expectation is they're gonna come back and say, those are some interesting ideas. They're not really what the law said, but let's keep working on some of them. We've talked about this water quality thing on Milford Perry with Kansas City several times. And again, it's somewhat outside their normal process and they don't really have any guidance on it. They're fairly receptive to it, but I don't know they know how to tackle it yet. I think if they get some feedback from higher up that it's something that DC is willing to look at, then I think we'll probably get a little bit more interest in trying to figure out how to actually do it.
Okay. The other question I had was you showed a whole bunch of small dams, small lakes up above the Perry. My question is, from a sediment control perspective, is there any way to try to are those designed strictly for cattle and maintaining storage for farmers, or are they in any way able to control sedimentation into the reservoirs?
Yeah, they are. You know, they're built. Their primary purpose really is to reduce local rural flooding. That's the main reason they're built. Like you say, that usually in order to get the landowner to agree to give up, you know, 30 or 40 acres of his pasture, then they're going to say you can run whatever cattle and recreate it on it yourself, and it's somewhat your reservoir, but it's really for flood control. The watershed district still maintains ownership of it, but the landowner has more access than the public, which generally has none. But they do serve a sediment purpose as well. I mean, they do a pretty good job of trapping sediment. We have had USGS, again, 8 or 9 years ago now, maybe longer, looked at, I think really was down in the walnut, the verdigris, and really said, in order to see a significant change in the suspended sediment, you need to have about 30% of the watershed controlled. Less than that, and most of the sediment happens when you get the higher rainfall, the bigger hydrology. And so you've got to get to a pretty good percentage of the watershed controlled before you start changing the overall hydrology of the basin. And so they were estimating that based on the suspended sediment data to be about 30%. And so they do have a sediment potential. And that's one thing we have started looking at as well, as, you know, not just like not all stream bank sites or reservoir sites are the same, not all watersheds dams are going to provide the same level of return on investment, if you will, on the sediment side. And so we've started looking at which of these sites would provide us the best bang for our buck on that sediment reduction. And that's another thing that NRCS is kind of interested in as well, and there's potential. They've got this RCPP, which I'm trying to remember what the R stands for, but Conservation Protection Program, Resource Conservation. Yeah. Anyway, it's kind of a way that somebody like the state or a local entity could develop a plan to use their programs in a little bit of a different or targeted manner. And we've talked about using that RCPP to target watershed dams on areas where we might get the most sediment control out of. So that's something that's in play as well and still being developed.
Okay, thanks. So the question I have also is those upstream watershed control, flood control, is water quality also built into that? Are the RAPS programs interested in those upstream dams?
Some are and some aren't.
Okay.
You know, there's from the water quality perspective, I wouldn't say that there's that's generally a big thing. You know, some of them, again, depends on the site. Some of them, again, they're going to catch some sediment. Some of them might help out with some nutrients just from creating a nutrient sink, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Dan may be able to talk about that, how his RAPS feels about it, but some are interested in moving forward on them, and some of them, that's just not a big issue for them. It's not going to help them out very much on what they're trying to achieve.
Okay, thanks.
So to follow up on that question.
Yeah, go ahead.
You said you had to kind of entice landowners to allow these structures on their property. Are there any rules that they have to follow with respect to fencing livestock away from the water or controlling erosion above these structures?
You know, there really haven't been to date any fencing requirements that I'm aware of. You know, when we started talking about those, taking one of these and building it up, making it more of a multiple small lake, like a Banner Creek or whatever, then there is a higher level of requirement of conservation above the reservoir. Generally, if you're talking about a watershed dam, they try and do it in concert with some other things, but it's not a strict requirement a lot of times. Tom, or Rob, if you're...
There's mitigation expectations.
Well, that's true.
With watershed district structures that have, it's crept out more and more that's invoked
okay.
requirements.
That's a good point. I don't know if you could all hear Tom, but here over the last decade or 15 years, the mitigation requirements, stream mitigation requirements, have really increased and crept up. Especially on watershed dams, and a lot of that mitigation work really then results in stream restoration, best management practices, fencing, those kind of things to do that. So there is requirements, and I appreciate Tom throwing that in, because there are requirements really through the Corps of Engineers and 404 permitting that requirement has come in over the last decade or so. So, yeah, good correction. Thank you.
Hey Earl, this is Rob.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if maybe we could put together a summary of those requirements and you know, what's required of the landowner to have to be able to put out to the RAC members, just so they can get an idea all at the same time, kind of what's required, what's allowed, and so on. We can put something put together to get out to them.
That'd be fantastic. I think there'd probably be some other RACs that would want to see that too, because there's some other folks talking about this as well.
Yeah, we could put a quick summary together and hopefully cover, you know, most of those points they have questions on.
Perfect. Appreciate that, Rob.
Okay.
Earl, this is Sarah, and I'm wondering, can you just take us back briefly to the slide on our goal? Like, so we have this information that we've gathered now, and I want to tie it back to our goal so that everyone can think about what, you know, what's really our task at hand here. So to increase water storage capacity and availability in the federal reservoirs. By 2020, purchase all available storage in federal reservoirs to secure an adequate water supply for the region. And then by 2025, evaluate the ability to raise the conservation pool. I mean, it's kind of so we're supposed to create the action plan for that, in order to meet that. But we are really waiting to see how the Corps responds right now to some of these things you've proposed, right?
We are, but like I say, they should be responding just any time now. So, I mean, I think we'll have something we can throw into an action plan one way or another here pretty quick.
Like within a week, or are we talking a week, or like Core time, meaning, sorry, I'm sorry, that, let me just say, is that a week or is that 3 weeks? Or is that 3 months or 3 years?
Well, I was going to say, if it's core time, it's not 3 weeks. No, but I mean, the law requires that they respond within 180 days. And so that's from January 1. So that's why I say, if we don't see something here, and like, it should be, literally, it should be today. Now, you're right, it's core time, so we won't see something today. But if we don't see something here pretty quick, we're gonna call and say, hey, where is that at? Because it's your time's up. But
right.
it's within weeks here for sure. Within a couple weeks.
So I mean, I'm thinking about just pulling the rest of the RAC members here. I mean, that's going to be really that whatever their response is going to really have a pretty significant impact on our action plan. You think?
Well, the important thing there, Sarah, is it gives us an idea of where they stand. It allows us to kind of proceed forward from there.
So what do we think we should do? Like, we at our next meeting, we're going to want to develop this draft action plan.
Right, but do we want to go and put a bunch of effort into something that we're maybe going to have to change based on the reaction to or from the core? I mean, we can put something together, but we also have to keep in mind that we may have to amend it, which, I mean, we're no strangers to doing that. We've been doing that with all of our other stuff.
This is Ramsey. I don't think we can do that until we have the Corps response, because let's face it, the Corps is driving the train.
Well, what is the water office thinking? Because that seems reasonable to me. I mean, that's kind of what my inclination is as well. Is just we're maybe at a pause point until we hear back from the Corps.
I think you do a parallel. I think you have to go ahead and put together a plan irrespective of what the Corps does, because the Corps is just changing the terms and conditions of what we have to do. In this case, we say we want to purchase available capacity. That's whether that's at a lower interest rate or whether that's over a longer period of time, that's just part of the terms and conditions of what we purchase. How are we going to go about purchasing is the issue, and I thought the Blue Ribbon Funding Panel is probably the source of where we're going to get money to purchase this additional storage. So to me, whether you purchase it through 2064 or whether you purchase it through 2041 is irrelevant. It's just the magnitude of how much money we have to come up with over that period of time.
Right. When I send out the link to these slides, you'd remember that there is a $1.7, $1.6 million annual cost if you call this all into service at Perry and Milford right now. So, 2020 is going to be about in that same ballpark. So the financial impact is something that, your committee has certainly considered with your other action plans. So there is that component. And just one other thing I'll add, just to remind you that what Earl's already told you is that the storage in those reservoirs is under contract. So there isn't any concern that it's going to be sold off to anyone else or taken over by anyone else, but any given year, the Corps has control of it and can release it, and it's not available then for other purposes if they release it for navigation.
So, this is Earl, I'm going to throw a couple other things in here. One, as we have talked to the Blue Ribbon Task Force about needs for funding, we have included this $3.3 million of need as something that, was in the vision, is in the RAC goals, as we need to call Milford and Perry into service sooner rather than later and deal with that. And so we've told the task force that that's as Greg was talking about, that's something that the Blue Ribbon Task Force ought to address, at least in the short term, and then we figure out as we move it into assurance storage later on, how do we deal with that? But in the short term, that's a Blue Ribbon Task Force piece of it. The other thing is, if we get some level of indication that the Corps is willing to talk about creating water quality pools in Milford and Perry, when we first brought this idea up to the Corps 4 or 5 years ago, their first response was, we might be able to look at that, but be careful what you ask for. Because while Margaret is exactly right, we have this under contract and they can't just go and sell it to somebody else. If we open it up and say we want to create a water quality pool, they can come back and say how big they think that ought to be, and they can say, and we think that ought to serve navigation, because navigation being a authorized purpose at Milford Perry, we could end up with a great big navigation pool. And so I guess I've kind of looked at this and said, I think $7 million off of the bill at each one of those reservoirs or something like that's a pretty big deal. And we, you know, if we can find a $14 million fix here, that's, we gotta go for it without changing the operations or impact on users. Why wouldn't we do that? But at the same time, when we send that request in and say, yeah, we want to look at doing that, we better be ready to call the rest of the storage into service and take the rest of it off the table and take full control of it.
So that they will turn that into navigation.
Exactly. And so that's where, you know, Greg's right. We may be able to extend the payments out over a longer period of time, but if we get some opportunity to get this $12, $14 million offset or whatever you want to call it, we better be ready to make the commitment on the rest of the bill at the same time. In fact, we better make the commitment on the rest of the bill the day before we send the water quality request. From an action plan, that's kind of how I've been thinking about how do you work through these different things and sequence it so that we can get a benefit without opening ourselves up to some significant risk.
Earl, could you put together like a chart on that where we see sort of like the annual expenditures of option A versus option B? Here's our ticket at the very end of the time, you know, where we look at over a 20 to 30 year period, what are the costs to the state of Kansas, you know. I don't think we have a summary slide like that yet?
No, I didn't put one up there like that. Well, I think we do have kind of what the existing amortization table is that where we came up with that $1.6 and $1.7 million and what's the cost. We don't do anything until the end, so we have that. And so we can tweak it a little bit with changing the end date and creating these water quality pools and give you – options A, B, C, whatever it takes here. So we can do that.
Yeah, kind of like you're evaluating a mortgage. You know, do we want a 15-year fix? Do we want a 3-year ARM?
Right.
You know, we laying out some options for us might make it a little bit easier for the RAC to evaluate the option.
Yep.
Is there any other RAC comments on that? Does that seem that it might be useful?
Well, only from the standpoint of Earl, how soon will we have an indication or any kind of report back from the Blue Ribbon?
So they've got their first kind of volley out. It's on our website now. On you know, their side is really to say where, how much revenue and where it should come from. So they're going to come back together on August 4th, and so I'm sure we'll have a new suite of revenue package that will come out of August 4th, and then that will really go out more on the street and back to organizations to get some comments of what they think about it. And so that we expect that after August 4th, they'll be back out on the street during September and maybe into early October. We'll bring feedback to the Blue Ribbon Task Force sometime in mid to late October with an expectation that they can unveil their final proposal of revenue package at the Governor's Conference in November.
Okay.
This is Dan Howell. And, you know, when you were talking about making changes to reduce sedimentation above the lakes, you need to control about 30% of the area. You know, I've talked to Tom about this before, but it'd be a good question for Rob, too. I've always thought that producers, to get them to do something where it wasn't a big issue, you'd come in and build them. Has anyone ever done a study on small dry pond deals on a big area where it caught the 5 or 10 inch rain and then it was designed to release the water back out over a period of time so that those small ponds were always ready to catch that big deal and catch sedimentation and protect roads and bridges? I've always thought that would be the most economical, low-cost way to hold a lot of water back and control sedimentation and designed to release it back out slowly, so it was always ready to do that in very, very low-cost deal.
It'd be kind of like rain gardens. You know how they have in the urban areas, they propose these rain gardens or the water gardens that catch the big water, and then they they release over time, but that writ large.
Yeah, Dan, this is Rob. You know, there are some of those the dry dam structures out there that do just exactly what you described. As far as the number of them, we'd have to take a closer look. Typically, you know, when folks put, you know, have a dam on their property, they do like to have that that impoundment, that water, you know, at most times of the year for whatever recreation, watering, whatever the case may be. But those do exist. And to get a better number of those, we need a little time, but they're certain, they certainly are possible.
But I'm thinking of a study on how many you'd have to have an area actually make a big difference. And so let's say I'm a producer and I got this section of grass. So let's say I want a small pond for livestock water with a tank below it, but I don't care if you put another small pond above it or whatever that, that holds that big rainfall and that flows through the small pond that I want for watering. It could be in a combination of a small wet and a small dry. But I just think the cost of smaller structures and holding water back would be very inexpensive and could be very beneficial and cost-effective. And I don't think you'd have trouble getting landowners to cooperate because you're not talking about taking a large, you know, you're just not talking about a lot of acres.
Right. I don't know that anything like that has been looked at. We can certainly ask around.
I mean, I just think it'd be very cost-effective and not a lot of money to control a lot of water and big rain runoff deals above reservoirs.
Right.
Just the thought.
It's a whole different aspect of that.
By Tom Stiles in the past.
This is Sarah, and that'd be something that, like, Dan, that could run through the KBWN system, that proposal. You know, that an SLT, a stakeholder leadership team, would say, we want to propose this small lake dry dam or, you know, wet lake dry lake combination system in this region of Tuttle Creek, and we want to propose it as a pilot, and that's the kind of thing you could run through that system. And they could then, everybody would analyze it, the area could get allocated the dollars, and then they could do a study on it and see how effective it is.
Yeah. Just a thought.
That's a great
Dan,
thought.
Dan, take a look. This is not this goal, of course, is back to the sedimentation goal, but that reservoir roadmap that I'll send you a link to that I've sent before, but has on those watershed structures not built, what the impact on sediment load reduction would be if those all were built. And then it was kind of compared to an estimate of cost compared to the cost of dredging, frankly, and the only watershed where it really seemed to make any financial sense when compared to dredging was at Clinton.
And the watershed dam structure is study. I'm talking about a lot smaller. I'm talking about instead of small lakes or whatever, I'm talking about a lot of small structures that holds that 5 or 10 inch rain and then it's designed to release out. I'm talking about a lot more of them
territory.
Yeah, I
understand. Yeah. So okay. Well.
Okay. Well, task at hand. Like what we have a meeting. Our next meeting is July 7th, and Margaret, I mean, I think people should go ahead and submit to you bullet points of what they gleaned from this presentation, what they would like to see in an action plan. You know, and referencing, of course, that we may get this information from the Corps, and that we would then. That you should really bring those bullet points to the next meeting. I'm just trying to think about how to run this ball down the court.
Right.
Does that seem reasonable? It's a little bit hard for people to come up with an action plan at this time, but I mean, everybody could just take their best crack at it. Anyone with comments?
You got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
So,
Margaret, are you with me?
Oh, yeah, I am. And as we talked about this yesterday, it's either recognizing that we've got a holiday weekend coming up. So I won't be here on Monday. Your meeting is next Thursday. So to send them to me, I can just put them all together or just bring them to the meeting. If that's the reality. So, you know, again, we'll send out the link to this so you can refresh what was in the PowerPoint, what is your, what you got from this, what kind of, you know, action steps really seem to jump out at you, and then the agenda shows your meeting next Thursday really being helping to craft what that action plan might include.
That seems really reasonable. And also, I'm wondering, and RAC members, please call me out on this if you think this is not a good idea, but could we have the water office, I mean, Earl, could you develop, you know, an action plan so we can look at yours as an option or a guide? I mean, there are people that they're spending their careers looking at this and have a pretty darn good handle on it. And I just think it would be valuable for us to see, if you were to create an action plan, what would that look like? Just because, you know, we just should not be, your level of expertise and knowledge amidst the whole water office and the various people engaged there is significantly higher, obviously, than ours. I think that would be helpful.
I'll follow your lead. We're happy to do that if the other members of the RAC are comfortable with that. We'll be happy to throw something on the table.
Right. I mean, I can see from the RAC people would say, well, we want to hear from, you know, what individuals think, but I think it would just help give us some structure and guidance to what this action plan would look like. And we can always say no if we disagree.
Right.
Significant opposition? Okay.
No.
And then, so if we could also get that money chart, too, of, like, basically kind of the various, you know, our option A, B, C, the different mortgages. You know, do
right.
we want to pay more up front? Do we want to pay more on the back end? What's the total ticket in the end?
Yep,
the
we can do that.
Financial cost. Okay. Other RAC members, questions, comments, suggestions?
This is Dan. My comment is down the road in the future that I truly believe instead of building new tunnel creeks and big lakes, I truly believe it's going to be cheaper on a slow ongoing process of dredging. I think it's going to be a lot cheaper than new structures down the road in the future is my opinion.
Thank you. Okay. This is it's 9:21. So I want to open the floor again for any other comments or questions from RAC members. Anybody else? Okay, so everybody's marching orders are please do your very best to come up with an action plan by our meeting next week, even if it's just sketched on a card. We're going to get a slide from the Kansas Water Office on the various options and the cost for each, you know, say three basic options. And then if we hear from the Corps, the Water Office will let us know, and then the Water Office team is going to come up with an action plan that we could use as a, you know, a model that we can change, but it could give us some helpful structure and guidance. I feel like Ferris Bueller. Are there any questions? No questions? Okay, Margaret, anything else?
I think we've got it. Everyone should have received the meeting materials by now. Just a reminder that we are meeting at the Kansas Water Office conference room 1 week from today at 9:30.
And that's
okay.
The Capitol a little bit east, right?
Pardon me?
The water office's location is
We're directly east of the Capitol.
Okay.
In the Landon State Office Building, the old Santa Fe Building.
Okay. All right.
Fantastic. Thanks to everybody on the committee and everyone else for your time and assistance today. Earlier work you put into the presentation, and we'll look forward to seeing everyone next Thursday. And in the meantime, I hope everyone has a really good 4th of July holiday. We feel grateful.
Great. Thank you all.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Earl.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.